Hello, and welcome to the 12th episode of Season 2 of The Dark Money Files, in which we shine a light into a murky world. I'm Ray Blake, and with me is my co-host, friend, and business partner, Graham Barrow. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Ray.
And apparently our first episode on Deutsche Bank was fairly popular.
Ray, it was. It most definitely has had the most downloads in the shortest space of time of any of our previous episodes.
It's become one of those stories that people are drawn to, hasn't it?
Yes, and I'm trying hard to avoid the car crash in slow motion analogy, but that's exactly what it feels like at times.
It has felt a bit like that. And we've had a couple of requests relating to the mirror trades, I understand.
Well, yes. We've actually been asked to comment briefly on the responses from the various regulators who were involved in the mirror trade investigations.
Mm. And they represent quite a broad spectrum of outcomes, don't they?
Well, yes, they do, Ray. Mm. Well, so first of all, there's the Central Bank of Russia, which is the prime site of the mirror trades. And they fined Deutsche Bank over what were referred to in the press as technical irregularities with respect to the mirror trades.
Mm. And how much was that fine?
Ray, it was 300,000 rubles.
Oof, what's that in now money?
Oh, well, GBP, that's £3,000 or 3,700 euros. Or if you want dollars, that's just over $4,000.
Wow. Okay. That's not what you'd call a swinging penalty, is it?
No.
And then there was Deutsche Bank's home regulator, known for short throughout the world as the BaFin.
Yes, and their response was even more lenient.
Yes, well, as I understand it, although this is based on press reporting, the German regulator is supposed to have told the bank that it had not found any evidence of the rules being breached. And in the light of DB's assertion that it was going to beef up its controls, no further action would be taken.
Yes, in rather stark contrast to the FCA here in the UK and the Department for Financial Services in New York, both of whom fined the bank quite a lot and installed either a skilled person or a monitor to oversee the required changes.
And as you hinted, those weren't small fines, were they, Graham?
Well, no, Ray. Unlike the somewhat derisory Russian fine, the Americans fined Deutsche Bank $425 million. And the FCA fined them £163 million.
Slightly harder to find down the back of the sofa.
Just a bit.
Mm. And reading what the regulators wrote at the time, and as we made clear in our previous episode, the fines were not so much about the mirror trades themselves, but the fact they were done without any obvious economic purpose, that they transacted on behalf of persons who were, to all intents and purposes, unknown to the bank, and the funds used to finance these transactions were of unknown provenance.
Yes, all of that sounds very suspiciously like money laundering.
It certainly does, Graham. And actually, I had cause to read more regulatory comment about Deutsche Bank this week because the European Commission published a very interesting report.
Did they? I kind of noticed that in my peripheral vision, but I haven't had a chance to really look at it. So was it interesting reading?
Well, let me tell you the title and you tell me whether you'd be interested in this. Report from the Commission to the European Parliament and the Council on the assessment of recent alleged money laundering cases involving EU credit institutions.
Yeah, I suspect there's a few of those. Do you know, I mean, that honestly sounds like an episode of the podcast to have a look at that in detail and comment on how that relates to policy and regulations and what we can learn from it.
I think we should, probably not today.
No.
I would just mention, though, the cases involved include ABLV Bank, Danske Bank, Deutsche Bank, FBME Bank, ING, Nordea, Pilatus, SATA Bank, Societe Generale, and Verso Bank. And there's a whole bunch of banks there that have received either passing reference or quite some detailed scrutiny in our podcast.
Yes. A couple of other comments. There's a lot of banks there that Deutsche was correspondent for, and sadly, quite a lot of banks there I've worked for. I would say post-event, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Correlation and causation are two completely different things, Graham.
I'd like to think so.
Absolutely. And I don't want to spoil this report for anyone. I definitely urge people to go to the European Commission's website and have a look at it. It's only about 20 pages long. There are none of the comments are attributable to individual banks. I think you can put two and two together. So if, for instance, I just read one example of something cited from the report, see if it rings a bell for you. Shortcomings related to remote booking models rendered elements of transaction monitoring more difficult. For example, knowing the origins of orders and payments or identifying linked trades across different jurisdictions.
Linked trades.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could be topical.
Yeah, I mean, so there's lots in there. It's very critical, but interestingly, it looks not only for the lessons to be learned by firms, it also looks at lessons to be learned by national authorities and regulators as well. So it's definitely worth a read.
Excellent. I shall do so.
Okay, so let's move on, shall we?
Shall we? So if you recall, at the end of last week's episode, we mentioned that at the same moment that the mirror trade started to be properly investigated, the FCA commenced what's called a systematic AML program visit, or SAMLP, with Deutsche Bank here in the UK.
Yes, we need to explain both what a SAMLP is and I think your role in this particular SAMLP.
Well, yes, I think we probably do. So let's start with the SAMLP. Back in 2012, the FCA announced a very new type of regulatory review which solely targeted the top 14 retail and investment banks operating in the UK. And the FCA said at the time, quote, "These reviews are intrusive, involving detailed testing and extensive interviewing of key staff responsible for the bank's business, for implementing anti-money laundering processes and for AML controls. We often visit branches as well as the operations of UK incorporated firms outside the EEA where they are required to operate UK equivalent AML standards," end quote.
No light touch supervision there then, Graham.
Well, no, Ray. And I've been involved actually in two of these programs, the second one being at Deutsche Bank, where it's fair to say I think I was deeply involved.
Yes, which is why we're going to have to tread carefully in our exposition of what happened.
Well, exactly, because some of that involvement was and absolutely has to remain confidential. So we will of necessity restrict our commentary to what is in the public domain.
Must have been an interesting time, though.
Right, it was. And I think it's fair to say that it became a wonderful example of Finagle's Law.
Finagle's Law, Graham?
Yeah, Ray, which is actually it's just an extension of Murphy's Law.
Oh, okay. So I know that Murphy's Law states that whatever can go wrong will go wrong.
And that's exactly right. And Finagle's Law just takes that a stage further and says that what can go wrong will go wrong at the worst possible time.
So what was your role there, Graham?
Well, Ray, I was asked to lead the client onboarding, so the frontline response to these requirements of the SAMLP, so that whenever and whatever the FCA requested, we would make available to them in the quickest time and in the most accessible format.
And how did it work out?
Well, from my point of view, I couldn't have had better support or better resources. Deutsche actually made a fantastic team available to me. They brought six of the best people from the Indian onboarding team over for months. I had a brilliant project manager and they gave me a dedicated room and other resources to prepare all of the KYC files.
Well, considering the seriousness of the situation, that's the only sensible approach, surely.
Well, you'd think so, but I think we do need to bear in mind that Deutsche Bank had only just been fined £227 million for the LIBOR case, and that included a Principal 11 fine of just over £100 million.
Now, I think we ought to talk about that before we go any further.
Ray, I think you're absolutely right, because it sets the scene extremely well for the approach to the SAMLP. Mm-hmm. It contextualises the situation at DB as the FCA were coming back. So, given that you've recently been acting head of compliance within a regulated firm, do you want to take up the story?
Oh, yes, I'm very familiar with the requirements of Principle 11, Graham. Principle 11 of the FCA's Principle for Business states that, and I quote, a firm must deal with its regulators in an open and cooperative way and must disclose to the FCA appropriately anything relating to the firm of which that regulator would reasonably expect notice.
Well, that's pretty clear.
It is. So to be fined £100 million suggests a very serious breach.
Well, it certainly does. So in brief, then, what was the issue that gave rise to that fine?
Well, there were three main issues identified by the FCA in the final notice that accompanied that fine. Firstly, that Deutsche Bank provided inaccurate and misleading information to the FCA when they told them that they were prohibited from sharing a BaFin report with them.
BaFin being the German financial services regulator.
Exactly. The FCA considered that Deutsche Bank was reckless in telling them this, but it also points out that recklessness is not the same as deliberately acting improperly.
Okay, so they were careless with the facts rather than supplying deliberate falsehoods.
I think that's about it, Graham, actually. The next one's not so good, though. The FCA say that Deutsche Bank provided a formal attestation that they had adequate systems and controls in place in relation to LIBOR submissions when there weren't any such controls in place.
Right. So there's nothing careless about that one, right? You either have them or you don't have them.
Exactly. And then throughout the course of the investigation, Deutsche Bank failed to provide accurate, complete and timely information, explanations and documentation to the FCA.
And that's not so good either.
No. The FCA concluded that this wasn't deliberate, but it did cause significant delays and difficulties.
You know, and I suspect, Ray, that part of the problem is that DB, like so many of the banks, and we've spoken about this before, has a patchwork of different systems due to the way it grew over time. And some of the difficulty was just around accessing and amalgamating information that's contained across a wide range of different stores of information.
We've spoken previously about these issues, haven't we, Graham? Legacy systems are the curse of global banks.
Yeah, and I knew it was one of the challenges that we were going to face in the SAMLP, but more of that in a minute.
Okay, so this first final notice goes into a great deal of detail about the Principle 11 failings, which we don't need to cover here, but it would be instructive for any firm, frankly anywhere in the world, to read the final notice in relation to the LIBOR fine as a case study in how not to manage a relationship with your regulator.
Indeed. So when the SAMLP was about to begin, I was told explicitly by the then head of AML in the UK that the entire review must be conducted in the most open, honest and transparent way. It just could not have been made clearer to me that the relationship with the FCA was going to be exemplary.
That's a good start.
Yes, and I think we should also explain here exactly what's involved in a SAMLP visit, don't you think?
Definitely. How does it start?
Well, the FCA gives you advance warning that you've been scheduled for a visit. In fact, DB was very fortunate in this respect, as they were expecting the visit to begin in early 2015. But due to the fact that the previous SAMLP that they were doing overran, that's the FCA were doing overran, and I think partly due to the fact that the FCA were now investigating the mirror trades, it didn't actually start until later in 2015.
And why was that fortunate?
Well, it meant we had extra time to prepare. We knew when they came in, they would want to see a large number of KYC files, and we wanted to be able to produce them in quick time, but in excellent order. So we had the opportunity to become really a well-oiled machine in this respect.
Okay, so back to the SAMLP process. What happens during the visit, Graham?
Well, in fact, it starts before the FCA arrive on site, because they do a desk-based review of the firm's AML and KYC policies and procedures back at the FCA's head office.
So that they already know what they're expecting to see before they arrive.
Exactly. The whole point of the exercise is to test whether the AML and KYC policies meet the legal and regulatory requirements, and then whether the procedures that underpin those policies deliver the required outcomes. The FCA did limit both the number of business units within DB and the extent of the regulations covered during the visit to ensure, I think, they focus their attention wisely. But I think that's still confidential as to how they limit it, so I'm not going to discuss that today.
Fair enough. What happens once they come in?
Immediately before they arrive, they send a request through for a large number of KYC files, which my team put together and which we then reviewed.
Now, you say put together. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think most sides would agree that giving the FCA unfettered access to the firm's systems isn't a great idea, and probably not achievable. So we put together paper files containing all the KYC information, each one of them in exactly the same order, properly tabulated, and each one given a unique ID number, so that we could track the files throughout the review process.
That sounds eminently sensible.
Well, you'd think so, and yet we'd heard stories of firms providing files in complete disorder, with no consistency to their format, and often with elements just missing.
You'd think the one thing you'd want to do with the FCA in the house is to keep them happy, wouldn't you?
Well, that was certainly one of our prime motivations, Ray. We also decided to do our own review of each file prior to handing them over to the FCA, and then include with the file the results of our review.
So what was the thinking there, Graham?
Well, I think we were all agreed that the files weren't going to be particularly well received, as the final notice is about to make clear. But we thought we could at least provide some reassurance to the FCA that we did know what a good KYC file should look like, even if some, or frankly, most of the files they reviewed weren't up to that standard.
Okay, that's good thinking, I think. So then they come in and set about reviewing KYC files. What then?
Yeah. So, not surprisingly, they had various questions about the files, and it was clear that the review wasn't going so well at that point.
As evidenced by the £163 million fine.
Well, exactly. So, so once they'd finished reviewing the files, they made arrangements to go out and do site visits. Now, the FCA have made clear that they will not restrict the visit to solely UK locations when other either nearshore or offshore entities are involved. And in this instance, they went to India, to Germany, to Ireland, actually up to Birmingham as well, to speak to support staff in each of those locations.
And I believe you travelled out to India with them.
I did. I have to say the entire DB team in India were fantastic in their welcome and hospitality and willingness to be interviewed over what was, in fact, pretty much a week's visit.
And after these site visits?
Well, then, after all that, they then conduct a significant round of face-to-face interviews with colleagues at the bank in London, and that's from top to bottom of the organisation.
Including you?
Yes. In fact, I had the good fortune, or maybe otherwise, to be the very first person to be interviewed.
And are you going to tell us all about it?
No.
Okay. Before we move on to the final notice, should we recap the process that led to it?
Yes, let's do that, Ray.
Okay, so the Systematic AML Programme, the SAMLP, involves the FCA doing a deep dive inspection of the UK's top 14 retail and investment banks. And it takes place, incidentally, roughly every 2 or 3 years for each of these banks.
Actually, that's a really good point, Ray. It isn't just a one-off, it's a repeating cycle of visits to monitor progress and results.
Exactly. The FCA gives firms plenty of advance warning that an inspection has been scheduled so that they can properly prepare for it.
Yes, and I think the point there is that they want to catch you doing what's right rather than what's wrong.
The programme consists of several phases: a desktop review of the firm's policies and procedures, a comprehensive review of a selection of the firm's KYC files, floor walking, interviewing staff across all business units as they go about their work, and then more formal one-to-one interviews with key members of staff to ensure they have a complete understanding of the end-to-end management of financial crime risks, and, I guess, to establish whether the tone from the top is real or just lip service.
Yes, and I think that last bit, Ray, is a good point and is really important. I am convinced that the FCA regard tone from the top as just one of the most important elements of the control environment. And I guess, you know, the senior managers and certification regime attest to that.
Yes, and increasingly they're talking about tone from the middle as well, and I think that's absolutely right.
Yes.
So then what?
Well, then the FCA ends the on-site element of the visit with an informal feedback session, which will certainly give some indication of what's coming.
And then they presumably go away and think about what happens next.
I think you're right, Ray. The regulator doesn't just dish out £163 million fines on a whim. I'd hazard a guess that there were some pretty senior people involved in some fairly extended meetings looking through the results of the visit before deciding exactly what they were going to do.
And once again, we know from the final notice that there were very extensive issues right across the board.
Ray, you're absolutely right. And looking at how much time we spent in just introducing the SAMLP and the background to the visit, there is no way we can do that justice in the very short time remaining.
I agree, Graham. There's one thing that comes through to me every time I read the final notice, which I do more often than I might care to admit. And that's that, just that it's a fantastic case study to help any firm understand what the regulator's looking for and how not to do it, not just as a SAMLP, but I think that the SAMLP process encapsulates the FCA's generic approach to any firm.
I completely agree. And it has to be said, if you do look at that final notice in detail, it's not actually all doom and gloom, though, is it?
Oh, no. There are some very clear indicators as to how to get the FCA on your side and keep them happy, which is why I keep going back to it.
Good man. And okay, then. So in part three of this extended look at Deutsche Bank, we'll go through the SAMLP element of the final notice in detail. We will try and draw out what other firms can learn from it and decide where we and Deutsche Bank go from here.
I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dark Money Files. We hope you enjoyed it. If you would like to listen to future episodes, please subscribe through iTunes, Spotify, or your normal podcast provider. Thanks.